The following podcast was recorded earlier for presentation at this time. Nah, that's a lie. I recorded it and thought I needed to edit it, didn't have time to do it, and then when I listened back, I thought, eh, it's okay, I'll just put it out as is. 2 days later. Enjoy! Have a great weekend! Kia ora and welcome to Airman's Podcast, episode 226. Today is Wednesday, July 21st, 2010. Today is my half-birthday. That means in 6 months from today, I will have my next birthday. But, you know, I've never understood why it is that we stop saying fractions after our birthdays. When we're a kid, we'll say, I'm 9 and a half, or whatever. But then it just stops. I mean, you never hear somebody saying, I'm 82 and three quarters. Well, actually, you may hear that because it's something of an achievement at that age. But for most of us, we just stop saying fractions. I wonder why that is. Anyway, today I have stuff loosely themed together around the theme of claws. And most of it I'm going to get to later. But first, I have a sort of a cautionary tale about English in different countries, and even within countries, about how there can be easy misunderstandings. And this is sort of an unusual tale, so you might want to you'll have to bear with me for a minute here. Recently, we were talking about dogs for some reason, and somebody mentioned something about their Jew claw. And of course, the first thing I thought is, I beg your pardon? And they said, the dog's Jew claw. And I'm thinking, that's an unusual name. Now, I should digress for a moment here to say that New Zealanders are probably the least anti-Semitic people I've encountered in my life. And this struck me particularly unusual because of that. I mean, about 2% of the population is Jewish, and Kiwis just probably don't even know a Jewish person. The Prime Minister's mother was an Austrian Jew, so technically he's Jewish. But the fact that I don't know whether or not he is gives you some idea of how much New Zealand or how little New Zealanders care about religion in politics or the public sphere. Even New Zealanders who consider themselves to be religious are nevertheless secular, particularly when it comes to government and politics. I mean, a previous Prime Minister, Helen Clark, who was Prime Minister for 9 years, was an agnostic. Nobody cared about that. Nobody cares whether or not John Key is actually is actually Jewish or whatever. And I don't know, because it's just not a matter of interest for New Zealanders. So that's sort of the background to this. And that's another reason why I thought this was a very strange expression. And nobody knew why it was called that. Actually, I'd never heard it called that. I always sort of called it the dog's thumb, because it's that weird little claw that's like partway up their front legs, and then sometimes on their back legs as well, although usually those don't break through. And they can be an issue because they can catch on things and tear and cause the dog pain and distress, those sorts of things. But it's also painful to remove, so generally speaking, it's recommended that if it's done, it's done when the puppy's 3 days old. So that gives you some idea. So I Googled it, as you do, and the only references to Jew's claw that I could find were references to Borat, a movie I've never seen and never will see, and also some frankly disturbing references that I won't repeat here. And then I found one buried in there somewhere for a dog site in the UK, and the lady was asking about her dog's Jew claw and about how, you know, it kept getting torn because it kept catching on things when it was playing. And, you know, it was getting expensive to fix. And also it was painful for the dog. And is it possible to remove it? Blah, 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 blah. Well, the answer is that the first thing is it's called a Dew claw, D-E-W, not J-E-W. And I thought, aha. And I have since looked it up. And yes, that is what it's called. Sometimes it's one word, dew claw. Other times it's two separate words, and sometimes plural, because they'll refer to, you know, both of them or whatever. And the thing is that in the New Zealand accent, D-E-W and J-E-W sound almost identical. It's very difficult for a non-native to pick out any difference whatsoever. The D-E-W, you know, this, like the stuff on the grass, is dew. With the D-U, it's more like a D-Y-E-W, but pronounced more like dew. So it's more like Jew in American speak. So whereas we Americans would say Jew and do, which would make it pretty clear that they're completely different words, in the New Zealand accent, they sound almost identical. And that leads to confusion, and people hear things wrong, and then it just sort of gets spread that way. And the same thing must have happened to this woman in England as well, that she just heard it wrong and assumed that she was hearing something she wasn't. It probably happens in other countries as well. And God knows we have things like that in the U.S. too, where two word, homophones, as they're sometimes called, words that sound similar, get mistaken for each other, and you can sometimes to comic consequences. But this is the first time that there was ever a word that I heard that gave me pause, because as an American, of course, and well, more importantly, as a proud liberal, I didn't particularly like hearing something which to my ears, to my American ears, sounded anti-Semitic, when in fact it is not. In fact, it's not even the word at all. The word is dew claw. But it reminded me of other incidents that I've encountered in my professional life, where people tend to write things, almost phonetically. Basically, it's the whole homophone thing again, where they write the word that they hear and not the word that they mean. And the best example of that, and to me it's probably the funniest, is that people will write, instead of sought, S-O-U-G-H-T, they'll write sort, S-O-R-T, because in the Kiwi accent they sound the same, sort and sort. So I can't even imitate it now. But basically, they sound the same. And it's probably the single most common wrong word that I encounter is sort and sought. But there are others as well, where they're clearly writing the word that they hear and not the word that's correct. And it's the sort of thing that I probably have seen in U.S. English as well, but I just didn't notice or pay attention to or what have you. But here, it's really, I don't know, stuck out in my eyes, you could say. And I'm not quite sure why. Maybe it's because I'm not a native speaker. I notice it more. I don't know. But it's the kind of thing that you don't think about when you go to another English-speaking country. Not just that they have different slang and different ways of putting things, but that they may have words that sound like one word when it's actually another. And you wouldn't think of that because they don't think of it either. So it's a cautionary tale that if you travel to another English-speaking country, you should make sure you know what they're talking about before you assume that a Jew claw is a Jew claw, for instance. Right, before I get on to my next real claw story, I'm going to talk figuratively about claws, and that is that the claws are out in a political battle here in New Zealand, although one has just ended, and I'll talk about that one first. I talked in the past about how the National Party-led government wanted to open up mining on sensitive conservation land, which is land that's been set aside because of its particular significance to the environment of New Zealand. It might be spectacularly beautiful or might have species of flora or fauna that are endangered or threatened in some way, and just land that's been set aside. Well, that has now changed. There had been approximately 40,000 submissions to Parliament on this proposal to open up the land. And a submission is a formal process where you make your opinions heard to Parliament. There's a particular pattern or whatever structure that you have to follow when you do this. And because maybe it's because of that, I don't know, but most people never do that. And for a typical bill in Parliament, you know, getting a couple hundred submissions is kind of routine, maybe a couple thousand if it's gets a bit more attention. But 40,000 is unheard of. Well, coincidentally, there was also that march up Queen Street opposing mining that was attended by some 40,000 people. I would have gone if I'd known about it in advance. I didn't know about it until I saw it on the evening news. But the fact that there were 40,000 people makes it probably the second largest demonstration in New Zealand history, perhaps the third largest. But anyway, it was huge. And the government backed down yesterday. The government announced its new mining policy. And instead of mining all of the sensitive land, it's going to just mine some little areas off on the side a little bit, but not on the conservation estate, as it's called. Now, this is a good thing. I mean, let's not forget about that. It's a very good thing that they backed down. It's a complete U-turn, and it's very embarrassing for the arrogant, if I may say so, minister who is pushing it. But it was interesting to see them spin it as backing, as listening to the people. And in a technical sense, yes, they did, because they saw that there were 40,000 people marching against it and all these tens of thousands of submissions. But the reality is they knew that if they didn't cut it off now, that they'd be dealing with this in the election next year. that if they tried to do some sort of compromise, it would extend the media attention and the public attention on what it was doing. And then at the end, people still wouldn't be happy, and they would very likely be punished in the polls. So what their strategy is going to be is to drop it, pretend that they've listened to the people, and then after the election, if they win re-election, then they'll probably do what they wanted to do in the first place, because in the next election, they're running on a platform basically of pretty much selling everything that's not nailed down, selling off everything, all the state-owned assets, which is what the right wing of the party wants. And the moderates are less convinced that that's a good idea. So that's what's going to be shaping up probably. But now they're trying to take mining off of the agenda. Now, the thing is, I was going to do my first ever propaganda video about that. And since they've changed the rule, playing field or whatever, it's sort of kind of moot now. I might still do it anyway, but if I do, it'll be different, obviously. And certainly post it in the stream, because I'd rather hear what real people think about it than the weirdos who tend to comment on YouTube videos, if you know what I mean. So, yes. But there's one other thing that's a bigger issue at the moment, and that is that the government is planning on, I'm putting quote marks, reforming labor law. They pushed through a change to labor law to allow small businesses of up to 20 employees to hire people for 90 days, and then at the end of 90 days to sack them. They were able to sack them without cause, without giving any cause. And they're now going to extend that to all employees. And this has been a huge matter of contention. This is new in New Zealand, of course, this sort of legal probationary period. And so what I thought I would do to talk about this a little bit is play from Question Time yesterday, where the leader of the opposition asks the prime minister about it. And he refers to, let's try this question again, because there's a lot of shouting and carrying on that goes on in the House, as you will see. And he wasn't able to answer the question in the political way in which he intended, which is being honest. It's just the truth. So here now is the second attempt at that question.
Sometimes you question the leader of the opposition.
Why are employers, according to the Employment Relations Act, as set out in the statutes of this House, why are employees under that Act denied natural justice by being able to be dismissed without good reason and without being able to challenge the decision?
The Honourable Prime Minister.
The Speaker will have another go at giving the answer, which is the 90-day period is covered by good faith provisions. The concept of good faith requires an employer to be communicative. It is reasonable to expect that includes giving a basic reason. However, there's no requirement for a formal written reason.
Okay, there's already some legal opinion that the Prime Minister is actually wrong about that. That there is no reason why an employer would have to give a reason to an employee, particularly if they don't ask for one. And they can just basically say, you're not working out, you're gone, or they can just say, I'm sorry, you're terminated, or whatever. They don't have to give an actual reason. And that is the crux of the issue, really. And the supplementary question to that sort of addresses that, and I'll play that part now.
The Leader of the Opposition.
Question, Mr. Speaker. What protection is there under the 90-day law to stop a bad employer sacking an employee without good reason, so depriving them of their livelihood and leaving them with a blemish on their employment record?
The Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, because you have to honour the provisions of good faith, and an employee could take a good faith case.
Well, the Prime Minister is wrong about that, because there is no provision in law relating to good faith. And that is really what the problem is. As the Leader of the Opposition was saying, somebody could be fired, and that goes on the record as having been fired from their job. And it could theoretically be several of these in a row. Now, the government keeps saying that they have all of this evidence of like 40% of employers surveyed said that they would not have hired staff if the probationary period had not been in effect. Well, that's easy to say now when it is in effect. We don't know that that's actually true, that for all we know, they may have hired the staff anyway, because if they need staff, they need staff, is what it boils down to. And there are ways that you can get temporary staff in. So I don't really buy that survey as being particularly accurate. And so the issue here is that this is really new for New Zealand. It's really new to have somebody who can be fired at will. Now, of course, I come from a state where that was really common, but it's completely new here. And it goes along with a whole bunch of other proposals that they're making. They want to, they say, to require unions to get permission before entering a premises for union purposes, and that should not be reasonably withheld, they're saying. But that's not in the law as far as I know. I haven't seen it yet. I don't think it's actually been tabled in Parliament. And the issue there is that part of the reason why unions make unannounced visits is so that they can check on working conditions. It's sort of like when the government shows up, they don't say, hey, we're coming to inspect your premises in 2 weeks, make sure everything's okay when we get there. They just show up to make sure everything's all right. Well, the same thing is true with the unions. They're checking on the working conditions of their members, and they ought to have the right to come in on virtually no notice. Now, that's not the same thing as saying that they should just be able to barge in, but it does mean that I suspect that the goal here is to keep unions out of the working place because, well, let me get to the because in a minute. Another provision is they're going to make it permissible for employers to demand a doctor's certificate for somebody who's sick one day. Now, the government is going to pay for anybody who is forced to see the doctor to get a doctor's certificate when they're sick for one day, they say. They have absolutely no idea how much that's going to cost taxpayers. And a lot of general practitioners, doctors, are saying, we won't see somebody if they're out for one day just for the purpose of a doctor's certificate. We're way too busy to do that. And generally speaking, busy practices could be booked up for a couple of days in advance. And the only people they're going to let jump the queue are people who are in more serious strait. And also they're saying, look, these people who take a day off because they're sick are genuinely sick. And they have communicable diseases like gastroenteritis or maybe some sort of, chest infection or something. And that's not the sort of thing you want people spreading around in a doctor's office. And so they really don't want to encourage people who are just taking a day off sick to come in to see the doctor. And I suspect that what's going to end up happening is that you'll have people who go to work sick rather than take the day off and having to deal with the hassle of trying to find a doctor who will see them and all that other stuff. And because doctors accept subsidies from the government, but people usually have to pay on top of it, it could be an issue for low-income workers. And that is basically what the problem is with all of these proposals. The people who are most vulnerable for this 90-day probationary period are young people, Maori and Pacific Islanders, and people of little or no skills, who could be both or either, can also be recent immigrants. And those are also the people, in many cases, who are least likely to complain to authorities if they're being exploited. And the problem is that if employers can hire people sequentially for 90 days, and they very well could do that for a job that requires no skill, like, say, packing at a factory or something, it's going to drive down wages for the people who are full-time employees or even eliminate their jobs. So there's a real negative effect on that, on wages, a real negative pressure on wages, which is precisely what National wants. The reason they're doing this, the reason they're making it harder for unions to organize in workplaces, and the reason why they're making it harder for employees to take a day off sick is because they want to drive down wages. When they talk about raising the income relative to New Zealand's income relative to Australia, it turns out that they didn't mean the workers or the ordinary New Zealanders. They meant big business. And that's a completely different thing than what they were selling in the general election. So this is going to become a major issue in the campaign ultimately. And there's going to be a bit of a fight before it gets through Parliament. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a lot of general strikes happening before this actually comes up for a vote, because the government is being arrogant and listening only to the interests of big business. So, you know, I think it could be headed for trouble. But those are just a couple things in the news where the claws are out. And now I've got another thing with another story about claws, and for that I need to play a theme music.
Meow, it's time for a pillar report. Meow.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yes, Bella is the subject of the next Claws report because we have an issue with her. You know, everybody has pet names for their pets, and one of my many names for Bella is Belzebels. And it turns out that her real name is Belzebub, I think, because what she does is she jumps on my lap frequently, and she wants petting and scratching, but then every once in a while, her ears will go back, her eyes will get sort of glassy and a crazed look in her face, and then her teeth will sink into my hand and her claws will come around and grab onto it with all the claws out. And sometimes she'll even twist so that she's kind of on her side so her back claws can get in and scratching my hand or wrist or what have you as well. Now, this was getting really bad. And at the same time, Jake seemed to be getting a bit, well, neurotic, for lack of a better word, at all this going on. He'd sleep under the bed and things, which was unheard of for him in all the years we've had him. The only other times he's done that is when we've growled at him for barking outside, and he sulks and goes under the bed. So this was a real concern for us. So much so that we were saying, well, look, if this situation doesn't improve, we're going to have to find a new home for Bella because she won't be able to stay with us. Because first of all, Jake comes first, but also this behavior is really pretty psychotic. And so we thought, okay, well, let's try behavior modification and so on. Well, first about Jake, we fixed his situation just by paying more attention to him, by going out of our way to tell him he's a good boy and to give him cuddles and kisses and scratches and things and tell him we love him and all that. And he responded instantly. Because dogs, of course, are pack animals, and they have to be reassured of their place in the pack. And once we did that, he was fine. Bella, however, is not. She started to get better, and for a while, she would start to bite, and then I would tell her no, and then she would stop, and then she'd lick my hand instead, which hurts, actually, but I can deal with that. And then all of a sudden, in the past few days, it's back to being demon cat again, and she started again with her claws and the teeth. It's gotten to the point where I won't even touch her now because I don't want to get attacked. The only time I'm allowed to touch her more than just for a second is when I'm feeding her. Then she lets me pet her head or her body or whatever. It's the only time, and that's because she wants something, I think. So I don't know where this is headed, I'll be honest with you. We're not done trying behavior modification yet. We've got spray bottles so that if she starts clawing things that we can spray her, or at least threaten to. We don't actually have to spray her. She knows what it is. And we thought about trying to find a cat whisperer or a kitty-catty psychologist or something to try to sort her out. But I don't know. You know, if this doesn't improve, I honestly don't know where the story is going to end. But there you go. But now I'm going to go on to voice letters. And for that, I have a theme as well.
Hey Arthur, this is Brother Sanders. I just thought I would tell you that I'm looking at a beautiful sunset. It's 7:30 in the evening, and it's 90 degrees outside. 32 for you continental types. And I just thought I'd let you know what you're missing by not being in the Northern Hemisphere at this time of year. Talk to you later. Bye.
Gee, thanks, Brother Sanders. What that's all about is that on Twitter recently, I was complaining about how bloody cold the weather was, because it was. And, of course, it's cold by New Zealand standards, certainly not cold by Chicago standards. And so he's just rubbing my nose in the fact that it actually has been quite warm in the U.S. And I can assure you that once we do get our warm weather, it's going to be nothing like parts of North America and Europe are experiencing at the moment. And up until today, the weather had really gotten quite mild, but it's turned rather cool again today. But you get that. And now the written comments over from episode 225. And the first comment is from Roger Green, who said, I was watching the news on July 10 and heard, only for the first time, that the rates on the passports in the U.S. were going up on July 13. We were away over the weekend, so we ended up getting to the post office at 3:52 p.m., just 8 minutes before the cutoff, and spent 2 hours, mostly in line, to renew my wife's and my passports and to get a new passport for the daughter. Some of the new rates are listed here, and he provides a link. Yeah, it actually kind of hit me by surprise, because maybe I just wasn't paying attention. I think that the embassy may have tweeted it, because I follow the New Zealand embassy on Twitter, but I'm not sure. You know, it certainly wasn't the sort of thing that I really registered, partly because, I mean, I don't need to renew my passport for a couple of years yet anyway. And so it didn't really affect me. But when I did look and saw that weird fee for announcing citizenship, that's when I actually took notice of it. But yeah, it is kind of unusual. And the next comment was from Moose, who said, just heard the latest podcast and now finally understand Creative Commons license. Very informative. And I love the song added to the end of the show. Thank you, Moose. And of course, that won't always be the case. I'm going to play a variety of songs, maybe not every episode, but many of them anyway. And, you know, just sort of things that I think are interesting. And so far, they're all things that I've heard on Pride 48. And along those lines, today's music I also heard on Pride 48, and it's by a group called Degrees, and they're available from Jimendo.com. I'll put a link in the show notes. And this song sort of grew on me over time, I must admit. I wasn't necessarily sold on it the first time I heard it, but it has sort of an 80s vibe, I think. It reminds me a little bit of The Cure, a little bit of Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, and several other groups. And so you may or may not like it, but I just thought it was kind of interesting, and I'm going to include it here. And there's nothing after that. There's just the normal sign-off stuff, so no secrets or anything. So from the album Part 1, this is Degrees with Run to the Music. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.